Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I kind of do work that way. It's not very steady, actually. It comes in big, like in bursts, in moments of sort of frantic, not frantic, but you know, a lot happening at one time, and then there, which exactly mirrors like life, and so I like that.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. Where sometimes you're just not like ready, and then the minute you're ready, it's like full blast, you know.
And it's hard to be in the time when you aren't ready, because you feel it's hard to remember that this is part of the process. And I have to do the research and the soaking in of everything in order to, I have to fill my cup in order to, you know, pour it back out. So it's hard to remember that.
Dear friends, I'm so excited to welcome artist Courtney Dudley to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Courtney is one of two artists that we selected at Kinhouse Gallery for our partnered open call for a two-person show and a week-long residency. So exciting to have Courtney selected. I love your work so much. So let me tell you a bit about Courtney. Courtney is an interdisciplinary artist based in Kingston, New York, with a specific interest in natural materials, biological forms, and the domestic sphere. Her practice includes research in earthly archaic processes that underscore the brevity of current power and social structures. She aims to make objects that encourage a culture of mindful collectivism. Courtney received an MFA from Pratt Institute in 2018 and has attended residencies including the Wasaic Project, the Studios at Mass MoCA. She's mounted a solo show at Hinterland in March and exhibited at Headstone Gallery in Kingston in October of 2024. And as mentioned, in this spring, around when this episode is airing, Courtney will be attending a family residency at our gallery and our residency program in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And she will also be exhibiting at Carbondale Arts in Carbondale, Colorado this year in 2025. You've got a big year, Courtney. Yay.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Kaylin. This is so exciting.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have gotten to know your work through this process. So thank you for applying to our open call. And it's just like so fun to, you know, like we put the call out there with like the intention of like the show and the residency and the interview. And like now today's the day I'm actually interviewing one of the artists that we selected. And I don't know, it's just cool to like see it come to happen, you know.
Yes, it's amazing because I haven't done a residency since I had my kids. Oh. I don't even apply to them, right? My kids are too little for me to leave them for any length of time right now. So I don't even apply if I can't bring my kids. And I just am really thankful for you guys for making that an opportunity, because it's, you know, it's a real barrier, especially for women to do residencies and keep going in our career. So thank you so much.
Yes. Thanks for saying that. I also feel the like family friendly residency barrier, and you know, that's why we wanted to create a space where folks could choose to bring their family if they wanted to and just have it all available there. So, Courtney, I always like to have my artists start by telling me a bit about, you know, your exposure to art as a kid. I'm just like always curious if you grew up in an artistic family, or like where, you know, kind of the idea of being an artist first planted itself in you, you know, or do you feel like it happened later on in life because you had no idea and no exposure?
It's a really good question. There are no artists, professional artists in my family. I grew up in a very conservative evangelical home, and I was I was drawing all the time and was encouraged to draw and do crafts and all of that kind of stuff through high school. But no, I didn't really. I grew up in Texas, in Dallas, which has a great art scene, but I was, you know, completely not a part of it at that time. And then I thought about going to art school because I knew I loved art and didn't really love much else as far as the career goes. Yeah. But my parents really encouraged me to choose something else.
More practical, quote unquote.
Yeah, more practical. So I went to journalism school at UT in Austin, and in the process picked a focus in photojournalism, which was just like art tangential,
yeah.
Art adjacent. Yeah. So I've studied photography a lot, and I learned all kinds of darkroom techniques and everything. And then spent the next 10 years being a documentary event, like all kind of jack of all trades photographer.
Okay.
Before finally deciding that the medium of photography just wasn't gonna cut it for me and my needs, and deciding to go back to grad school as an adult, as a real adult. I kind of tried everything, mm-hmm. but I think I ended up as an artist because I tried to have a real job, quote mm-hmm. unquote. I tried to do other things. I tried to just do commercial photography for brands and stuff like that. And I just kept searching for something else. So, and I don't know how much of that has to do with my upbringing as a growing up so religious. I've done a lot of like reprogramming since then, but leaving, this is something I think about with it when it comes to my upbringing, but haven't quite been able to put words to, but leaving a doctrine and like a system that gives purpose to life can be like very difficult. And so mm-hmm. then you growing up as an adult, trying to figure out, well, what am I doing here? What am mm-hmm. I supposed to be doing here? What's the point of my life when you grow up so sure of something? And I think I'm really starting to deal with those issues in my work now. And, just think like, I'm always kind of trying to tap into the source. Yeah. And,
Well, there's so much I want to talk with you about, but I just have to say that I also grew up evangelical and, evangelical Christian, I should say, and have gone through many, many different iterations of like Christianity. And I think part of the reason that I landed as a career as an artist did have to do with like what you said of like growing up being so sure of the answers. And like having this like belief system like put on you that like there's like the capital T, capital W, the way of how mm-hmm. you do things. And I think I just feel so opposed to that way of orienting myself to the world that I love that being an artist is just discovery, it's questioning, it's dismantling, it's like never having the right answer, it's, you know, open loops and process. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that, like, of course, listeners, I'm not saying people can't be like religious and be an artist, but
of course,
I just, that's part of my personal journey too, I guess, is yeah. that connection there of like the way that you can orient yourself to the world, like feeling like okay with the mystery.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There were questions that were off limits, and now it's like no questions are off limits. And like
yes.
every work I start is an experiment from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And the process of experimenting and is part of the work. Mm-hmm. So that totally resonates with me. And yeah.
Well, maybe off record, we can chat a bit more about that. I just have to give a shout out to an audiobook I'm listening to right now. I just started it yesterday and I'm almost done because it's so good. It's called Dinner for Vampires. Have you heard of this book?
Yes.
Which, not saying that either of us were in a cult, but it is about a woman who was like in an evangelical cult, mm-hmm. and like at the same time as she was also an actress and a professional actor, and didn't like, it's just her like processing the decisions she was making that like got her sucked into like this religious experience, and I find stuff like that fascinating. So if that is up your alley, it's a really good listen.
I'll check it out.
Also, I love a memoir that the author like reads it to you. So it's a really good audiobook experience.
Same. I love a book that's specifically a good audiobook.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, this one is totally. Very good. Recommend. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, back to you, Courtney. So I want you to describe your artwork. I have lots to say about what drew me to your work, but I think it's helpful for listeners to have artists describe like what their work looks like and what their practice involves to kind of get us started.
Okay, cool. My works are three-dimensional sort of like wall hanging sculptures. They are textiles. They're silk based textiles that are kind of like quilts. Mm-hmm. They have batting, and then I stitch them like quilts, and they're naturally dyed. And all of the dyes that I use, I've hand cultivated myself. And often I use a wire or armature to make them more sculptural, and they are very reminiscent of biological plant forms, mm-hmm. and forms of the female body, plant and human reproduction, mm-hmm. and they're brightly colored.
I love them.
Thank you so much.
I'm so interested in your journey from photography to textile and mixed media work, because that is the same journey that I went on. Actually, I say I like got my start as an artist, as a photographer, because I did like weddings and portraits for 5 years, and mm-hmm. like at the time, you know, was like making more money than my husband, and like I was kind of like had the bigger career, and then when he transitioned his career, it afforded me this like moment of, is this really what I want to be doing? Like, and I kept, you know, I would go like shoot a wedding and then spend all week like on my computer editing photos. And I kept longing for like something to do with my hands that was like tactile, you know, like mm-hmm. I started painting and I was like doing like crafty type stuff like for our home, and you know, eventually like you went and got my MFA, like, or went back to grad school, and you know, I guess I like went for painting, but I, you know, I ended up as a, I don't know, somebody who was really doing mixed media work like by the end of my program. And do you feel like that was what you were longing for? Like,
yes, so similar. I was always doing to make money. I was always doing kind of, you know, whatever. And I worked in the city as a wedding photographer for many years as part of, I call it the wedding industrial complex that I just like had to eventually bow out of because it was just making me miserable. And which is like people's happiest day. It shouldn't be miserable, but it was.
It's a hard job.
It's a hard job. And I was always trying to work on my own like personal stories, my own photo stories, I mm-hmm. guess you could call them. And I did when I had time, but you know, it's hard when you have like a full-time other job, and it's hard when your creativity is also your workhorse. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, and so, yeah. Like you said, you started doing other things with your hands. I just felt and still do feel, because I have so much history in photography, and I have always been looking at photography for so long, I'm always trying to work it back into my work. I'm like in the process right now of around this time of year, I'm always experimenting with cyanotypes because mm-hmm. I can't grow anything here in upstate New York, so I can't make any new dyes. I'm always trying to work it back in, but I find that photography versus painting or sculpture, specifically clay, like what you were talking about with your hand, using your hands, photography is so representative of an actual thing that exists in the form, and with mm-hmm. it that carries a whole life and a whole history of its own. Mm-hmm. So to put a representation like that on an otherwise like abstract idea, it's just, I'm really have had trouble melding all of the I've always wanted to emote more in my work, yes. and have my works be more emotive and more open-ended than I think photography allows. And also I love the tactile, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, and I just can't get, I don't love sitting behind a screen. Mm-hmm. So, that's why I still do, like, that's why cyanotypes are fun. I still do, film photography when I can. But I like things I can do like in my house with my hands, and make sort of like be making something out of nothing with photography, with most processes of photography, not to say all, but with most processes in photography, you need something to make the image.
Yes.
So that's my beef with photography, but that to say I have beef with photography because I love it. So, yeah. You know, like, because I do love it. So
I really,
I'll never count it out.
Yeah. I really appreciate that idea. I hadn't really thought about it the way that I always couch my journey from photography to, you know, fine art, if you will, is what I shared before about like it was about the tactility for me. But I also think I love what you said about kind of wanting more from like the process, like instead of just creating something that already, like capturing something that already exists. You know, for me, I consider myself like a very process-based artist. So I don't know what a piece is going to look like when I go to start the piece. You know, it's like all about the intuition and the feeling and the journey that the materials take me on. And I think like that's what I was longing for, was like not knowing, like the mystery, you know, not having the answer at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow. It's so exciting.
Yeah. The best fine art photography, I don't want to say this but off the top of my dome, is art is conceived before the photo is taken. You know, like the work goes into the setup or, you know, like collage or whatever is being photographed. So the process happens like before the shutter clicks.
Yeah.
I mean, not everything, but
yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Courtney, tell me a little bit about just kind of who you are at this moment. Like how, I think you have two kids. How old are they? Where you live? Like what's your kind of like elevator pitch of like where are you at in life right now?
Oh, right this minute, it's, you know, March in upstate New York, and the snow is finally melting, or the ice is finally melting. And I'm very much in a play and figure out when I can make my work mode because I have a 4-year-old and a 7-month-old.
Mm-hmm.
And they are at once the inspiration and my muses, and also the thing that stands in the way of me making stuff every day. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of where I am. I'm full-time momming the 7-month-old and just getting as much time in my studio as I can. I moved upstate from Brooklyn 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I love it here. I love the community here. The arts community specifically.
And do you all have property where you, like you mentioned that you plant stuff and grow mm-hmm. your own dyes, and was the move connected to like your art practice at all? Like, were you looking for something that could fit, you know, kind of the way that you wanted to live as an artist, or was it like a little more practical?
It's a good question. Which came first, chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
we already had this home.
Okay.
Before pandemic, thank God.
Yeah.
for price. Yeah, this whole, you know, housing and everything. And we have a few acres. And so I've always wanted to, and I've always had a bit of a green thumb, or just liked planting mm-hmm. and growing things. And so I don't know if it's the work that made me plant the big dye garden, or the gardening that made me interested in the work. They kind of came about like around the same time.
Okay.
And they feed each other. Sometimes I think like making my work is like an excuse for me just to be like, oh, I have to go out, be out in the garden all day,
yep.
you know, cause I
Sorry.
Had to, last year was the first year that I really like committed to like a dye garden specifically,
okay.
and had like, you know, a bunch of dye plants that I was trying, pregnant. So this year's going to be better for my dye garden. Last year was a tough year for the dye garden because I am not a happy pregnant lady. so I think you can only go up from here.
Yes.
But yeah, I love being outside. I always did love being outside and paying attention to nature and being in nature. I think even though I grew up in Dallas, which is a major city, in Texas, there's just a lot more opportunities of like being outside. And then moving to Brooklyn, I always felt drawn to upstate New York and always mm-hmm. felt compelled to be up here, camping, whatever I could do, hiking. And I really enjoy that, those moments of like convening with nature and being one with nature and taking them really seriously mm-hmm. As kind of like a church almost, you know, like hitting in the same spot, fulfilling spot inside. So
when did you start to bring that appreciation into your art practice? Because you haven't always made mm-hmm. art that was as like ecologically minded and right. So I'm curious about like your introduction to like natural materials and, you know, kind of a practice that was a bit more rooted in nature, literally.
Yeah. It came about, which is sort of, this is sort of photography related. It came about by paying close attention to time. And in the photographs I was taking, I was often found myself photographing like the seasons. Mm-hmm. And because a photograph captures a fleeting moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of my work now also as captures of fleeting moments.
Mm-hmm.
So just paying attention seasonally to the changes. And I also started thinking about how we, like in the zeitgeist, we change all of our decorations, like, you know, every few months, like, okay, it's about to be time to get out the Easter eggs. And then in the fall, we get out our cornucopias and stuff. It's so like ingrained into our lives. As a ritual,
mm-hmm.
Relating back to some of the earliest pagan rituals and, you know, sun worshiping or farming practices. So all of those things kind of came about to be the inspiration behind using specifically using natural dyes. And as we were speaking earlier about how much experimentation, how experimentation is so fun in the work, they are never exactly alike, because if I harvest the plants like a day after peak or before, or, you know what, there was a dye that I made last year, and then a week later I really loved it, so a week later I went out to go find more, and it had already gone past peak and it was a completely different color.
Oh my gosh.
So there's just a lot I love all that.
Yeah, I love that. I'm curious if your journey into textiles and natural dye happened at the same time, or if, because to me those seem like really big things. Like natural dye is something that I'm curious about, but haven't, like, I know it's a big commitment in terms of like a learning curve and like getting introduced to it. So I haven't really gone there. But when I was only painting, I had like a couple years where I felt the same about textiles, where I kept like feeling this inclination to like bring textile into my painting practice. But I was like, no, the door is too big. Like, I don't want to open it. Like, it's Pandora's box. Like, it's just going to, you know, and then once I finally did, like, I was so glad that I went that way. But I'm curious for you if there was more of like, you know, I guess like a start for both of those that was symbiotic, or if there was like kind of some overlap.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a story of a journey, more of a door closing than a door opening. I am kind of a jack of all trades in that I, like we've already talked about photography, and then for years after grad school, I was mainly focusing on ceramics. And was doing a lot of making my own glazes and working in my home and just having clay dust everywhere all the time. And then around that time, just before the shutdown, the pandemic shutdown, I was pregnant and had to have a termination for medical reasons, a medical abortion. Because it was a late term abortion because the baby had not developed kidneys therefore it was not compatible with life. Thank you. It was a really rough time, and it was also like literally the day the city shut down was the day I was having the procedure. And so there was a lot of like medical paranoia going on for me, and it was not helpful.
Before you had,
Yes, I had no
children. Because you have a 4-year-old. So this was your first baby.
Yes, my first pregnancy, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It was a really difficult time, but and at the time someone told me, you know, one day you'll make it into art. And I was like, that is the rudest thing anyone's ever said to me. I can't believe you would be thinking of you know, but I did end up doing that, of course, because we take everything, we absorb everything, and we transmute it. And so now it's sort of just a part of me. It's still obviously sad, but I have two wonderful children now, and it's just something that I carry. But it made me just look at ceramics with a side eye, because we never knew why the baby didn't develop kidneys. And I, all of a sudden, my ceramic studio shut down, and I had no access to kiln, no access to things. And so it was just because it was such an intense emotional time, I needed to wipe the slate clean and start somewhere else. And
I'm so glad I asked this. This is like so interesting. I'm also just thinking about like the sustainability of a practice that like you can't access in a crisis, you know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That like that's just like really interesting to me, like how it would be so detrimental, like to you're stuck at home in COVID and all you want to do is like make your art, but like because of the nature of your practice, like you can't. And so it's like wow, so cool that you transitioned.
Yeah, I ended up, I had a few things in the works, like when that happened. And so I ended up sort of like finishing off that box of clay and then pit firing them in the backyard here.
Oh, wow.
Up here. And making a body of work that's on my website called Sudden Relics. And so they're very like specific to that time and that experiment, because in the process of pit firing, there's a lot of breakage. Mm-hmm. And so it was just very... It felt very appropriate to the experience that I was going through. And back to how I deal with, or I pay attention to and like to tap into nature in my work, I was really faced with at that time the realization that nature isn't all beautiful butterflies and perfect seashell shapes and everything. Like, things go wrong in nature all the time. Trees fall and little things die, and mm-hmm. that chaos is part of nature. It's part of me. It was part of making that body of work also. So mm-hmm. it ended up being a very healing time. But I said, what can I do at my house without talking to anybody, without going to any stores? What can I do? Because it was back then, and I just haven't really looked back, because I have sunk quite a lot of my mental capacity into like learning everything I can about these dyes and figuring out how to manipulate them. And also, I feel like once I open the door to like another, like if I were to let like painting or something back in, mm-hmm. then the door is just open, and like you were saying earlier, and it's like, how do I know?
I know.
So I work kind of well within these constraints,
yeah.
because I just have like a set of, these are the things I can do. It's really very, for the textiles that I was talking about earlier, it's very few elements that make them up, because it's just the one dye on each thing is one dye, and then the different colors on the sculpture are made by the chemical modifiers that I use, which are just baking soda, citric acid, and iron liquid in water.
Okay.
So those are what shift the color, like that's what it's painted on, and it shifts the color. So it's pretty pared down.
I'm looking back as you're chatting, I'm looking back through your Instagram, and it's really, there's this like moment where you posted a ceramic piece, and then like two photos later you posted, there's like this post where it's like, I don't usually share what I'm painting on the grid, but I'm loving the results from silk after lots of experimentation. And actually like there is like a really strong relationship between like the way that you paint with the glaze and then the way that you paint with like dye, and which of course like makes sense, but it's just cool to see it kind of side by side, because when we're talking about it sort of abstractly, it sounds like this like seismic shift in like your process, and it's like, well, actually, of course, as an artist, all the work does end up being connected in some way, you know?
Well, it's like you follow what you like to do, mm-hmm. right? So like a lot of what I liked to do in ceramics is the stuff I like to do now, which is the experimentation. Like you shut the kiln door and you are like just crossing your fingers that when you open it, it's going to be like all that you imagined or more, mm-hmm. you know? And that's kind of what goes on with the dyes too, because it's just so much liquid, and mm-hmm. the silk isn't like prepared like a canvas would be, so it all flows in and out of each other. So there's a lot, like sometimes I have to walk away and let something dry for like an hour flat on the table, mm-hmm. before I know what it's really going to look like. Like I have sketches and stuff that I'm inspired by, but it's very hard for me to like practice these ahead of time, because they just don't, like you can't erase, mm-hmm. you know, kind of so that is similar. That that's part of one of the things that carried through about ceramics. Yeah.
Do you feel like, I mean, I know that your practice kind of shifted because of COVID, but I can't help but also think that maintaining a ceramic practice when becoming like a new mother would have had you know, a lot of challenges versus like textile practice, right? That's, I mean, I know that's why a lot of people get into textiles is because you can keep it in a basket on the floor mm-hmm. in your home and grab it when you have 10 minutes or whatever. So I can't help but, you know, assume that transitioning to textiles around the same time when you became a mother was probably part of the journey too.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense. Like clay, you have to baby. You mm-hmm. have to baby the clay like on time, you know, when it's dry, like drying and everything. And you can't like have a baby and also baby that baby. So it's too many babies.
Some people can, but it's probably really hard. So shout out to all you ceramic artists. We're bowing down to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. But yes, you can sort of pick up textiles and put there's still things that are very time-based about mm-hmm. this work. Like I said, when I'm pouring everything out, it kind of all has to happen like all in one session. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the textiles felt very natural to go into. I got pregnant again shortly after the loss of my first baby. And so I was thinking a lot. I was just totally in baby world, thinking about baby mm-hmm. blankets. I was making things that were about the size of baby blankets and just thinking about what was cozy and mm-hmm. comforting. And so they're always sort of supposed to be make you feel cozy, even if they're dealing with like more difficult subject matter.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really like that about your work, kind of that play between, is this like grotesque or like kind of weird, but then it's also like soft and voluptuous and mm-hmm. you know, comforting, and kind of like the pillow form, which like is very inviting, you know. So I really like that. I mean, I think that's like so indicative of like the conversation around florals too, you know, like something is like so beautiful and like has its moment, and then, you know, it can decay and look completely different, and mm-hmm. kind of that juxtaposition like feels very present in your work.
Yes, thank you. That's what I'm going for.
Oh, well, good. It's there. I want to hear a little bit more, like, kind of, you know, we talked about like the transition that you went through like 5 years ago, but like, what does your practice look like right now? It seems like you've really rooted down into, you know, your voice as an artist. Like the work that you're making feels so solid and, you know, just like there. And I'm curious,
thank you.
What kind of is like a week in your life or like a season in your life of like studio practice and juggling young parenthood and having a dye garden? And I don't know, like there's lots of things that are present that you kind of have to keep continually in motion in order mm-hmm. to make the art that you make.
Yeah, it's definitely a juggle. Anybody with a baby will tell you, like, as soon as you get used to one phase, they're on to the next mm-hmm. thing. And so it's hard to really get into any kind of real pattern mm-hmm. Right now. But I do this since the new year. I have started having a nanny 2 days a week,
okay,
which is a big improvement for me so that I can get back into my work a little
yes.
bit. Before that, my partner was on paternity leave.
Okay.
I did a very generous paternity leave and was able to work from home for like half of the time. So he was home from July through December, and I was able to make a lot of work then, actually. Okay. Which was really like, right after I had the baby, I was so productive, weirdly, because I had been very sick and just couldn't do hardly anything while I was pregnant. And so then I had the baby and it was like just this You're big just, burst of
you've
energy.
Been like holding it in for a year.
Yeah. I had been kind of like months. Maintaining the garden and stuff. So I had all of these materials like ready to go as soon as I felt like I could do it. So yeah, then my partner went back to work, and so things are a little bit slow now, but I'm back. I've kind of like mentally burnt it all down, and I'm sort of like starting over to see what might change this next year. I love the work that I'm making, and I could keep going making like similar forms or bigger or, you know, more complicated. But I'm also just like taking this moment to kind of like define for myself my voice, as you said, and, read and sketch and draw and meditate and be in this moment, so that when I am able to have that big burst of whether it's the materials or the time that I need, I'll be ready, because I kind of do work that way. It's not very steady, actually. It comes in big, like in bursts, in moments of sort of not frantic, but, you know, a lot happening at one time. And then which exactly mirrors like life. And so I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely relate to that, where sometimes you're just not like ready. And then the minute you're ready, it's like full blast, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to be in the time when you aren't ready, because you feel it's hard to remember that this is part of the process. And I have to do the research and the soaking in of everything in order to, I have to fill my cup in order to, you know, pour it back out. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to remember that. But
are your pieces mostly hand sewn and hand stitched, or do you use a machine?
I use a machine.
Okay. It's awesome, because I feel like specifically, like when you quilt them, they look hand quilted. Like there's like this like organic, I don't know, you must be like a whiz with the machine, because I feel like it's the opposite, where you're like, the effect that you're going for is like, you know what I mean? But I look at your work and I'm like, oh, they're like hand. I don't know. It's awesome to me.
Thank you. I started out doing them by hand, but it would be just so tedious and slow if I were to do that. Because there's so many teeny tiny stitches. They're big compared to like a lot of stitches, but I am fighting. I spend like, when I'm in working with my sewing machine, I'm like spend often half the day fighting with the sewing machine. So I'm glad that it doesn't look like that.
Oh, there's nothing worse than like that kahunk, and like your thread gets stuck and I'm like, not again, this bobbin, I didn't thread it right. Oh, it's like so annoying.
Yeah, exactly. But I use a free motion foot so that's how I'm able to have so much like fluidity and motion, and what I think probably what makes it look hand stitched.
Oh, it's stunning.
There's just a lot. Thank you so much.
And what is it filled with? Just like traditional batting?
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's like quilt batting. I get it pretty thick because I want it to be so 3D.
Yeah,
so
volume.
Yeah, it's like 2-inch thick. So it's often like furniture, like outdoor furniture padding sometimes. But it's just like the thickest batting that I can find.
Okay. I also want to hear about the dye practice. Like, one thing that I think would be cool about having a dye practice and having your own dye garden is actually that is part of your practice that you could easily bring your family into, you know, like, I don't know, like working out in the garden. When we lived in Tennessee, we had a big garden and I loved bringing my kids out there, and you know, they would like play and I'd be like weeding or whatever I was doing, you know, and I just think that is a very family-friendly activity. And I hadn't really, until talking to you, I hadn't really thought about how that is part of like your art practice too. So like your kids get to be involved in studio time, even if it's actually in the garden, which is cool.
Yeah, we'll see this year how it goes with Hazel. My daughter is 4 now, so maybe she will be able to tell the difference between a weed and a flower. That's the only issue.
You're like, no, it's not that cool, actually.
Yeah. I actually really love the time by myself in the garden.
I love how I was like trying to like get this vision and you're like, no, the vision's not there.
When she was little, when she was smaller, I would have her out there in, you know, pack and play, kind of just getting fresh air. Mm-hmm. And it was so nice. So it is an ideal, and she is helpful. She wants to help so much. She wants to be a helper, and that's part of the problem.
Yes.
I like to try to work them into everything I do. Mm-hmm. Right now, you know, when they're older and I can have more me time, I'll gladly like do a residency by myself or travel by myself. But while they're little, it's just not feasible. So why not make it all like as family friendly as possible?
Mm-hmm.
Makes it a little bit easier on me.
Well, Courtney, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the idea of like applying for things and knowing like what to put yourself out there for and what to pursue. Because obviously you know, we selected you because you applied to our double duty open call, but I'm curious about, you know, just like sometimes as an artist, it's like so overwhelming to know where to put your energy and like what to focus on and what to apply for. Is this like, you know, is my $35 like really, is this where I should be putting this $35 or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would love for you to just talk a little bit about like how you think about that, how you strategize, what is, you know, worth your time, like how you kind of organize or think through like what you apply to.
Yeah, I take it on a case by case basis. Like I said, with your application, I was just really excited about the possibility of a family residency, and all of the, you know, the show and the podcast. It was, it was just sounded like a great opportunity. And I looked at your Instagram and saw work that I thought my work would be in conversation with. So I knew that I wasn't like applying to something that only accepts painters, figurative painters or something, you know? So I check those things to make sure that my work is in line. And it's kind of a random number, but I just don't apply to anything that costs more than $35. Just as a principle, I'm like, I'm not going to apply to it. If it's
something about that 45 that is that feels like a lot of money.
Not doing it. Yeah. unless, you know, like in the future, if it's like some like $50,000 prize and whatever, like, okay.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but those, I think you're like nominated for those. So yeah, I don't love the like pay to play aspect of the art world. So I just don't even entertain it if it's expensive. And I don't know. I was just thinking about applying to something yesterday. I got halfway through an application and was like, you know what? No, this isn't the right thing for me. And I don't really know why. I just kind of felt like it wasn't. And time is so limited to be making or to be applying for things and keeping track of like deadlines and stuff. Like, so that's just kind of an ongoing process of weeding it out and then being really excited when you do get accepted into something like the Kid House residency.
Well, what are some goals that you do have, like that you feel like you're working towards? Is there like something that you haven't yet like kind of achieved that you're trying to like position yourself to get to?
I just want to be able to keep making art in a way that is a way where it feeds itself. I just want to be self-generating, so that there's work being made and then work being asked to be made. I have a couple of specific, I have one specific project in mind that I'm hoping to do this year that I am not yet ready to talk about, but I think I might be able to work on it when I'm there.
Oh, yay.
With you guys. So maybe we could talk about it then, but yes. A sort of a bigger installation type thing. I would love to do bigger installation type.
I love that space. Arch, the marigold arch.
Yes.
We have to make sure we put pictures of that piece in the post because that is stunning.
Thank you. That was really fun and crazy time to make it. I made it last year for Upstate Art Weekend at Hinterland. And it was the entry to a portal, like a collaborative portal that we were working on at the other members, which Hinterland, shout out, is a group of women creatives here in the Hudson Valley Catskills area. And I'm just like so grateful to have that here. But I was supposed to be in labor that weekend. And it was oh just so God. Funny because it was a port, or that was his due date, but it was a portal. It was like, yeah. It couldn't have been more like
portals on the brain.
Just like, yeah, exactly. Like, and then he came 3 weeks early. So he was actually able to come and go through the portal. But I really enjoyed making that and having the space, the spot to do it ahead of time. It's not, I didn't make it, you know, it was sort of made for with a place in mind. So I would really like to be able to make more things with a place in mind. That aren't just supposed, like, I love making things just like for the wall or for someone's home. But I think there's something sort of freeing about thinking of it, not so much as like a physical object like that, but more of like an experience.
Yeah. So like you knew the location of where you were going to make a piece. Did you know it was going to be a portal or how did you? Okay. So
we kind of came up with it all together.
Okay.
So, and I'm pretty sure I had volunteered for that pretty early on in the brainstorming process because I had that idea, but you know, I honestly can't remember.
Well, you had a baby like at the same time, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. A couple more questions before we wrap up. I want to just have you share a little bit of wisdom for folks, and I may be asking this selfishly, who might want to start a dye garden. Like what is like the first thing you planted? Did you start small or how did you kind of, again, it feels like this like Pandora's box of like a little bit of overwhelm. What is like an entry point?
So I think that something to know about natural dyes is that it's for me in my practice, they're not washable. Like I'm not making clothes, just like you wouldn't make a watercolor and then put it through the wash.
Right.
So that's something that's really different about my work than about like, if you see like, you know, all of the cool reels on Instagram of people doing stuff, like my work is quite different from that. So I did an online Zoom crash course with Madeline Provost. I'm sure you can find her on Instagram. Okay. I just did her like day long crash course entry level thing and felt then went off and experimented on my own. And I learned a lot and I mostly did food scraps at first, which was fun because I was asking my friends to hoard their food scraps as well. So it was like people were bringing me like huge bags of onion skins and avocado peels and which was, you know, fun to make it feel like it was a community endeavor.
Yes.
And
the only natural dyeing I've done is when I was pregnant with my first kid, I did same thing, onion, cabbage and avocado onesies.
cute.
Which, of course, didn't really last because clearly I didn't really know what I was doing, but I had a lot of fun like making the dye, and then, you know, you like tie-dyed the onesies like with them, and then they, you know, they lasted a little bit, but it eventually faded. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And different dyes are more steadfast than others. So I think part of the process over the past few years has been working more and more towards cultivating dyes that are more steadfast. Like cabbage is not light fast. So even if you didn't wash it, it wouldn't stay that color. Beets are not, you know, beets seem like they should be so, they should really die, but they don't. And then the things that do will like really surprise you sometimes. So
did you plant like one thing at first, or did you just kind of go all in? Cause it's, I asked that too, because, you know, it's so cyclical and takes so long. Like you plant a garden and you got to wait for like however many months until it's like even going to work. So,
last year I planted like 25 scabiosa plants. I started more seeds than that because a lot of these, you have to grow them from seed. They're difficult to find in a plant nursery. So, scabiosa was the, scabiosa and coreopsis were the main ones, I believe, that I grew last year. And then it's, you also, you have to continually harvest them, to keep the plant making more, flowers. And then you have to sort of wait until you get, have harvested enough for one dye bath. And harvesting, the more you harvest, the more will grow, generally until it starts being the end of the year. But I start, last year was the first year I started plants with grow lights in my guest room. Just
just like an art practice, just takes over the house.
Yeah, exactly. I had some friends come stay and I was like, I'm sorry, guys. This is what your room is.
I'm making art here, people.
So this year I might expand a little bit with the grow, with the starting things ahead of time. And I also think of my, this, I feel really lucky to live here. And I think of myself as like a steward of the land, of this land. And it's a property that the son who grew up in this home lived next door until recently. And he told me that his mother just planted the most beautiful gardens and it was so beautiful, blah, blah, blah. And then for the past like 30 years, it just fell into disrepair. And so we've got a lot, there's like little moments here where I'm like, I can tell that this used to be like a beautiful patch of daffodils or whatever. But there's a lot of like keeping up of the space. And then there's choosing, and there's deciding what to leave wild as well. Because they had the whole front always mowed perfectly. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. So now we've let the front go to like rewilding. And I just saw, watched a, owl catch a mouse there last week. And like
amazing.
That definitely would not have happened if I would have been mowing the grass. So it's kind of the balance of all of those things. And we're kind of on top of rocks. And so the soil isn't necessarily great for the garden. I had to ship in, I did get a delivery of soil two years ago to really start the dye garden. I don't know if that helps answer your question.
I
think vegetable garden first before I went to dye garden. I was doing vegetables first for a few years.
I think the way that you're inspired by your land and like your gardening practice and how you let it overlap and influence your art is just awesome. And I can't wait to see your pieces in person. So, Courtney, we always close with five final questions that help folks get to know you a little bit better. Feel free to answer these as briefly as you want. Who is your biggest art crush?
Okay, this is very hard.
I don't know why I start out with the hardest one.
That's the hard. It's really hard. I love all of the like spiritualist painters. I obviously Hilma and Agnes Pelton, and Ithil Cole Kuhn is one who's recently come across my mind, who is a sort of lesser known of the spiritualist painters. And she was actually like kicked out of the surrealists for not renouncing occult practices. And I just think she sounds like a real badass, like rebel type. Yeah. And her work is like so juicy and weird and very like grotesque.
Say her name again.
Ithil, it's Ithell, and then I may be saying it wrong. Cole Kuhn, Colquhoun.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really into her. And then I want to give a shout out to a living artist who I think her work is so cool. She's also a fellow Texan, Virginia Lee Montgomery. Mm-hmm. I think living in Austin, Texas, and her work is so different from mine. It's very digital, but she grows Luna moths in her studio. She raises,
cultivates
them, and makes work with them, and it's just so beautiful and so cool. And I'm like,
wow.
That it's so amazing to be doing that, to bring nature inside the studio like that. I just love it.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Bucket list, 2-person show, you two.
Oh my God.
That'd be cool.
Oh my God, I'd be so happy. She's so cool.
What is a favorite place that you like to travel, or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
That was also very hard because I'm sort of not traveling right now because of the baby. I loved traveling as a single person, and it's hard not to be doing that right now, but mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like coming to terms with it. But I'm gonna say India, because I've been twice and I love it so much, and I can't wait to go back now because it's been almost like 10 years since I have been, and take my partner and maybe even our kids. I have a really best friend who's from there, and every time we talk about going back, she's like, yeah, you're bringing the kids. I'm like, I don't know. So she wants to bring the kids, so we'll see. But I'm just excited to eventually be traveling again.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Yeah, I feel you. Tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
Recently I listened to the audiobook by John Donahue called Anamkara, Anamcara, which is a Celtic word. I think it means soul friend. And it has just been wonderful for putting me, like keeping me like in my body and like grounded and in the studio. And it's not an art related book specifically. Mm-hmm. It is a spiritual book. I think John O'Donohue was like a priest of some kind, but it's very open-ended. Like you can take any kind of, you can come at it with any kind of, you know, views, mm-hmm. I believe. And it just has...
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's really... And his brother reads it in the most beautiful Irish accent.
Oh.
So it's a really good, specifically audiobook.
Yes. Love an Irish accent. favorite meal?
Caitlin. It's too hard. I love food so much. I love all food, but I'm gonna say my parent, the fajitas that my dad makes back in Texas. We go to the Mercado, we pick up fajitas. You just can't get anything like it up here because we don't have the tortilla. You know, they have the really good tortillas, the really fresh avocados, like everything. And then my dad makes it on the grill, and my sister makes the guacamole, and it's just the moment more than anything. And also the food is like, the meat is seasoned really well.
Yeah. Awesome. Texas. There you go. Fajitas. okay, Courtney, who would you like to give a shout out to or thank for supporting your work?
Oh, well, I already shouted out Hinterland. I would like to shout out like the Hudson Valley artists, like in particular. Like I lived in Brooklyn for 13, 15 years and never felt the community that I'm feeling here now. And that's not, I'm not going to blame Brooklyn for that, but there's some, just something about being here that has really, I feel like I've been able to make like connections that I never made before. And I feel really at home here. And just like, I just really love working here. And also my partner, Alan, who just, really believes in me. And that's even when I don't. So
that's so, so important. Yeah. Okay, Courtney, well, we'll obviously be sharing all the links, images of your two-person exhibition and everything, but I would like you to just let listeners know where they can connect with you or find out more about your work.
You can find me on Instagram until we get something better, at Courtney Dudley Art.
Perfect. So, thank you so much for...
Thank you so much.
Everything, for applying, for introducing your work to us, and can't wait for the show in May and to meet you in person.
Yay. Thank you for the opportunity. Me too. I'm so excited.
Yes, thanks. The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.